You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
I'm Ashley LeCompte-Lozich, head of R&D for Smart Equine.
And I'm Jenna Boxgarden, manager of digital marketing for Smart Equine. And today we're going to talk about a year-round issue that we see with horses, but we're going to be looking at it from a spring angle specifically.
Yeah, digestion is something that's always top of mind for riders and owners and barn managers alike. But with spring grasses coming in and temperatures changing, it's something that's going to be very top of the list. So let's talk about it.
Smart solutions, trusted voices. Your source for equine health and wellness. This is Horse Health Cast by Smart Equine. The discussions in this podcast are intended for educational and informational purposes and are not intended as veterinary advice. You should always consult with a licensed veterinarian or qualified equine health professional before making changes to your horse's diet or care plan. Hosts and guests cannot guarantee the reliability, accuracy, or completeness of the information shared, and as such, these discussions are not a substitute for veterinarian or professional guidance, and any actions you take are at your own risk. Products discussed on this podcast are not endorsed by Smart Equine and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any medical issue.
So I think most riders and owners would agree that spring is one of the trickiest seasons for horse digestion. Within the next months, we're going to be transitioning from winter routines, there's new grass coming in, the turnout schedules change, and along with all that, feeding and riding programs can all go through like a reset and an update too. And if that wasn't enough to contend with on its own, all of these changes can stress the horse's digestive systems and then increase the risk of digestive upset. So great for all of us.
Yeah, exactly. So even though digestion is a huge topic in and of itself within horses, in this episode, we're going to try and focus on how a horse's digestive system works, why the hindgut is so important, and how we can support a steady, healthy digestion during one of arguably the most challenging seasons of the year.
Let's get into it.
All right. So in nature, horses would typically, right, the way that they were designed, they would typically spend the majority of their day grazing, consuming small amounts of forage continually throughout the day. And as such, their digestive systems were built and designed to accommodate that for a slow, steady intake of fiber, right? But that's not always how they live. So there's...
I know. If only it could work that way. And I feel like it's like very easy to overlook that how we manage them isn't always like fully supporting their internal designs. So like not every horse is on 24/7 pasture or has unlimited access to forage. Some horses get and need higher volume grain meals, and even like the riding schedules that we have can impact how their digestive system works. But we keep saying digestive system, like that's common knowledge amongst everybody. So
yeah.
Actually, let's take it back a notch. We kind of break down what the digestive system even is in horses.
Yeah, of course. So like its function, its anatomy, I guess we'll do both. So firstly and foremost, obviously the function of the gastrointestinal tract is to metabolize food, to digest, to break down, to absorb, but also it's responsible for housing up to like 70% of a horse's immune system. So there's a lot to unpack here. It's not just what you think when you think of digestive system. There's like the access. We'll get into it further on like the brain and gut access, but there's a lot at play here. So let's start first with just breaking down kind of the anatomy of what we talk about when we were saying the GI system. So first you have your foregut, and that starts with your mouth. So anatomical features of the mouth are like your teeth, your tongue, your salivary glands. And I say you're not a horse. So their teeth, their tongue, their salivary glands. So digestion begins in the mouth, right? We have enzymes like amylase and that are helping to break down carbohydrates. And that begins with mastication. It begins when they're just chewing and incorporating their salivary glands. And eating forage actually helps to promote more saliva production. So it's a great positive feedback loop. So we start with the mouth, we start with mastication, and then we move to the esophagus. So the job of the esophagus is to transport food from the mouth into the stomach. And it uses these rhythmic muscular waves called peristalsis to help encourage that bolus of food through the remainder of the GI tract. So something that I'm sure like horse owners have heard of before is like choke. And that is when like a bolus of food becomes lodged in the esophagus. So that's that structure that's leading mouth to stomach. Then we get to the stomach. Fun fact is that horses have the smallest stomach in relation to their body size of all domestic animals. So it is only 10% of their digestive capacity, and it can only hold about 2 to 4 gallons. So considering the size of the animal, pretty small. Yeah.
our horse and picturing that is crazy that only 10%.
Not
taking up the rest of the space, or are you?
Yeah, we're going to get there. We're going to get there. Yeah, we're going to get there. So the stomach, it stores feed. It controls the movement of feed into the small intestine. It secretes hydrochloric acid and pepsin, which helps to break down carbohydrates and proteins a little bit more. Minimal absorption of nutrients is happening here, and then shunts the food into the small intestine. So the small intestine is responsible for about 28% of the gastrointestinal tract, made up by the duodenum, jejunum, the ileum. Food passes through here in about 3 to 4 hours. So the small intestine is where we're talking the primary site of digestion for non-structural carbohydrates, proteins, fats, fat-soluble vitamins, some minerals like calcium and phosphorus are absorbed here too. Fat metabolism is happening here with bile secreted by the liver. Horses don't have gallbladders, so this is like a constant flow of bile into the small intestine to help break down fat here. So this is the early part of the digestive tract where a lot of nutrient absorption is happening.
Okay. And that's a lot of pieces in and of itself. And then there's still more to go.
Yes. Yeah. So horses are high in gut fermenters. Their GI tract does not look like ours. So they have some really special sauce in there. So then we move to the hindgut, which is like a colloquial term that, you know, we've all heard in some capacity. But like, what is the hindgut? What structures really make that up? So the first part of the hindgut is the cecum, which is like the coolest part of, it's the coolest organ ever. It's about 12 to 15% of the total tract capacity, and food only remains in there for about 7 hours. So this is where a lot of that fermentation is beginning. Structural carbohydrates that cannot be digested efficiently go to the cecum to be fermented and digested by microbes. So we're talking billions, if not trillions, of microorganisms are helping to ferment that food, break it down into volatile fatty acids that can then be used for energy. So like when you and I, if we were to try to eat grass, we can't really make energy out of grass because we don't have the ability to break that down. Horses do. Very cool.
And is that specific to the cecum, right? Like that's...
There's some fermentation that happens later in the large colon as well. Cecum, then we get into the large and small colon. So now we're talking like big capacity. 40 to 50% of the total tract capacity lies in the small and large colons. And food can reach the large colon or small and large colons within like 7 hours, but they're usually going to stay there for like 2+ days. So there is more fermentation happening here as well. And then the small colon is responsible for reclaiming excess water and returning it into the body. This is where the fecal balls are actually made nice and compact. And then, of course, the rectum is the exit. So lots of pieces and parts in there that are pretty unique to horses. Another super unique, and I'm sure people who are listening to this podcast are probably horse people that understand this, but it's a one-way tract. Horses do not vomit. It doesn't go the other way. There is a sphincter at the bottom of the esophagus called the cardiac sphincter. It only allows food to go one direction. And the way that the anatomy is laid in their body, they cannot regurgitate. So this is something that's really important when we talk about stomach health, hindgut health of the horse, is that we have to be monitoring everything that goes in because there's only one way for it to go out. And if they do get an upset stomach, you know, it can be really catastrophic.
And I know that's like a very serious thing. Like I'm very aware that all of this is a very serious conversation, and I'm going to inject one very non-serious thing here, which is that once upon a time, you know, when people ask you to do like two truths and a lie as like an icebreaker?
Yeah.
For some reason, I would always include horses can't throw up. Joe says like a complete non sequitur, nothing about me, just to throw people off their game. And it worked because it got people talking about that more than like the two truths and a lie that never seemed to do anything. But when I started working here, and we did that icebreaker, I couldn't do it because we all know that information. So I had to change it to kangaroos can't back up.
No. Wait, I didn't know kangaroos couldn't back up.
Don't fact check it. I was told it once at a zoo in Australia, and I've never checked to see if it was real or not. And if they lied,
I'm going to take you at your word. I'm going to take you at your word that kangaroos cannot back up. And you take me at mine that horses cannot vomit, I promise.
I've never seen it happen. So yeah.
No, me either. Yeah. So
there's a ton of pieces that are involved. Like you rattled off very impressively, I might add. Thank you, scientist.
Of course.
All of these pieces that are inside a horse's body that like we don't really think about on a day-to-day. Like we think about colic, we think about digestive upset, we think about the microbiome and all of those things. But I don't know, me as a horse girl never once sat there and was like, gee, I wonder how my horse's like small intestine and colon are doing. So it's crazy to kind of like reframe their giant bodies or teeny tiny bodies for ponies,
right?
And how much is jammed in there and working to make it all happen. And then also kind of like how many places it can go wrong, which is not to be like scary or harbinger of bad things. Just it's a really crazy kind of awareness moment.
Yeah, it's a very, very sensitive system. So when we talk about like what makes it so sensitive, one, it's that obviously they can't regurgitate. So if something goes wrong, right, it only has one direction that it can flow. But the other piece of that is just because of this incredibly diverse microbiome that they have in their digestive system. So it's home to, like I said, millions, trillions of microbes that help to ferment and digest fiber. This includes bacteria, protozoa, fungi, viruses, you name it. And they work in this symbiotic, mutualistic way. The more diverse the microbial population is, the more resilient the horse can be. So we're talking fermenting long-stem forage for energy, support in immune health, support in metabolic health, generation of B vitamins and K vitamins, aids in nutrient absorption, helping to maintain digestive stability. So this little ecosystem of gut bugs, you know, as we'll call them, are pretty fundamental to a horse's well-being. And it is a very, very sensitive ecosystem. Things like
the word microbiome, originally when I hear that, I'm thinking like terrariums, like the shoebox dioramas that you make in science class.
Yeah.
Not that it's the same thing, but like,
I mean, kind of. Yeah. I mean,
system within the horse, which is pretty crazy.
It is. It's a whole little ecosystem in there. And the slightest thing can throw that ecosystem off a whack. And there are repercussions for that. So some of the implications are intense, some are not. But things that we're looking at when we talk about pulling it out of homeostasis are age. As a horse ages, stress levels and exercise demands, health and metabolic status. Do they have some, EMS, Cushing, something like that? Diet changes or forage qualities. I mean, it's like a tale as old as time where you hear about like a horse getting into the grain room, right? Pharmaceutical drugs. A lot of this can... All these issues or all of these things can lead to disruptions in this sensitive ecosystem. And we typically are referring to this as dysbiosis or the microbial imbalance. And that can lead to a host of concerns, like, you know, something as simple as loose stool to something as serious as colic. So and even behavioral issues, weight loss, and laminitis is another one that people are going to be very concerned and looking out for. So yeah, one thing I just mentioned was my horse got into the grain room. So I feel like this is something that everybody at some point in their life has, it's either happened to them or it's happened to somebody that they know or somebody at their barn. And I remember trying to explain to people like, oh, how is it that my horse eating too much grain can cause his bones to rotate through the bottom of his feet? Like, come on, explain it to me like I'm five, right?
A Z kind of thing. It does not seem like one.
I know. I know.
Yes.
Yes. So this is just one of those, like one of those very demonstrative scenarios where it really goes to show that gut health truly does have so many implications throughout the body. So when we have a scenario like that, either a horse gets into the grain room or someone who's been standing on limestone for 6 months goes out into rich spring grass, fermentation patterns are changing. This can change the pH in the hindgut, and it leads to a condition known as hindgut acidosis, where the microbial, the beneficial microbial population dies. Those are important bugs. We needed those bugs. This can lead to an overgrowth of toxins being released into the body, endotoxins. Digestive efficiency decreases, and now we have a risk of colic and laminitis. So it is very important that all transitions that are being made with horses be done very gradually so that their microbial populations in their hindgut have a chance to adjust and evolve with the horse's routine.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. In almost every case, horses need a good amount of time to adjust, yeah. Whether they're into a new barn, like they're becoming a show horse or no longer being a show yes. horse, they're retiring, like even just their physical changes or their routine changes require a good amount of ramp up and ramp down for their like mental health and well-being. So it should not come as a surprise. It always comes as a surprise to me how much time things really do take when you do them correctly and like to the best of your ability.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. It serves them best in every capacity, not just their hindgut, to do everything nice and slow. It's like the rabbit and the hare, like that old proverb, like Slow and steady wins the race. That's right. So the last piece that I want to talk about here, because I find this to be absolutely scientifically magnificent. Like, I think this is the coolest thing in the whole world. But this is something that we see in ourselves. We see this not just in horses. It's actually understudied in horses, but we have a lot more evidence of this in the human world. But the microbiome gut-brain axis. So the nervous system, the immune system, and the endocrine system are all interconnected with this GI microbiome. So that changes to the environment of that microbiome can impact other systems in the body as well. And this can lead to behavioral changes. It can lead to an impacted immune system. And it can lead to the vicious cycle of like stress lowers the microbial or damages the microbials. Stress, right? It's like this negative feedback loop that keeps going and keeps going, which then further impacts the microbiome. This is a super cool topic that I would love to see more widely researched in horses so that we can understand the relationship of these different systems together. But it's kind of how like you, when your horse has gastric ulcers or is having tummy troubles or is a colic risk, like you can feel that change in their behavior. You can see like it is, and it's not just horses, it's people too. So I think that that is so interesting just to demonstrate like how interconnected our gut health is to our immune system, our behavior, like how nuts. So I just want to give digestive health the credence that it deserves because it is so important. And I think we all think about it in the context of colic, and it's so much bigger than that. It's just so much bigger than that.
I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. That I feel like myself and a lot of horse people look at, you know, what's happening in their horse's stalls on the other end of the food intake system, right? Like, is it loose? Is it color? Does it smell weird? Does it have pieces in it that it shouldn't? Are there things crawling around there that shouldn't be? Like, that's what so much of it focuses on, is that and colic. And just going through this and realizing how many other places this really does affect and interact with and intermingle with, like, gut health is something, and digestive health and the whole GI tract, like, it's something that I always supported. Like, I always gave a digestive supplement as a peace of mind thing. And sure, I'm glad that I did, but I didn't really think about what exactly that all was supporting. It was such like an easy one-off that I didn't really think about just all the pieces that went into what that support was doing and giving. So
yeah,
I mean, always to have done it right, but man, it would have been cool to realize how much I was doing in the moment and giving myself a pat on the back. Then
I'm going to give you a pat on the back right now because good for you.
And that goes for everybody. Like, if you're feeding digestive support right now and you just listen to all of this, I hope you're feeling really good about your choices to prioritize that in any way you can.
Yes, I agree. I agree. No, well done. Job well done.
Everybody, round of applause for yourself.
That's right. That's right.
Something you mentioned that I know we wanted to take some time to hone in on was that spring grazing is something that really does affect changes and things like that. And I think most horse people know in some capacity that we have to be careful when it comes to spring grazing, whether it's, you know, ponies that get fat off of air, horses with metabolic issues, or things across the, like that board. We all know about that, but it seems like from this, it should be every horse that's really kind of taking a moment to adjust and get used to it. But like, can you explain like what makes spring grass different? Is it just that they haven't seen it in a while? Is the grass itself different? Like, what goes into that?
Probably a little bit of both, but the grass itself is certainly different. So immature young grasses tend to be higher in sugar and non-structural carbohydrates. They tend to be higher in moisture, lower in fiber. So the composition of these young grasses certainly is different. And then it is that your horse may have been standing on snow for the last 6 months and has not. Remember, any abrupt change to their diet is going to cause. So even if it's in the middle of the summer and your horse has been standing on limestone since May and you're introducing him to a grass lot in August, you're probably going to have a similar issue. So yeah, the spring immature grasses definitely do have a different composition. But even if it's not just the spring, we're talking the difference within a day, like the difference between morning grasses and afternoon grasses, right? So as the heat of the day and the sun is at its peak, photosynthesis is at its highest. And so afternoon grasses are going to be a lot more rich than the morning grasses. So some horses can tolerate standing on grass a little bit in the wee hours of the morning and are not going to do so great on it in the afternoon. So it is, you know, worth noting that it's not just seasonal. It can even, there can even be some ebbs and flows in those grasses throughout a 24-hour cycle.
Which is crazy cool to think about. And I was always very lucky that my horse, as he aged, he did end up with metabolic issues and he had Cushing's and he was on medication and support for that. But I had a really great barn and a really great barn manager, and he would go out overnight with all the very fat little lesson ponies. So it was, you know, my 16-3 warm blood and, you know, 12-hand high school ponies just out there living it up overnight. And they would go out from like 8 p.m. to, I don't know, like 10 a.m.
Yeah.
And they had, I think, the best schedule out of everybody because there was no supervision. Who knew what the heck?
Yeah, right? They're wreaking havoc at night.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure there were...
I'm picturing like Toy Story where they like all like come to life at night and like plot the end of the world.
Yep. And again, I'm sure the big dumb blood out in the field was the one looking around being like, well, guys, like what chaos do we cause now? And the ponies had a full plan. There were a lot of fence boards that came down overnight that we never really understood how or where those were coming from. But I digressed. Really cool to know that there are options to help horses transition and like be able to graze and get that experience and get that time that's very important to their gut and to their mental health.
Mm-hmm.
While doing it in a slightly safer way than if you just throw them out, you know, mid-afternoon and hope for the best when they haven't seen grass in 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, I literally start with something as simple as like hand grazing. So like I am a big fan of hand grazing. It's like where I do my deepest thinking. And so like I'll take them out and we have a little polo field adjacent to the barn. I'll just take them out on the polo field and then I can like literally be there and measure exactly how long they've been. So if I let them go graze for 15, 20 minutes and then they go back on their limestone and then maybe, you know, move that to 30 minutes and then it's long enough where I might be able to toss them out on the grass for an hour. And then so slowly building up. And I mentioned hand grazing because like, listen, if you don't have a grass pasture available to you, like that's okay. You can still go find some grass somewhere and just, you know, stand there with them. So increasing turnout, slowly increasing their available grass, whether it's, you know, in hand grazing or in a pasture or in a paddock, however they're accessing it. And that gives their microbial communities a little bit of time to adapt to a new feed source, the same you would if you were changing their hay or changing their grain.
I love that you mentioned the hand grazing because that like that's, I think, kind of under talked about maybe or undervalued in some ways. But that was something that when I got to teach beginner lessons was my favorite thing was to, hey, you did great. We're going to end 5 minutes early. Get your tack off, get your pony's halter on and give them, you know, 5-10 minutes to hand graze. And it was fun to phrase it as like, you guys earned it. You deserved it. While also checking off the list, being like, okay, they're getting some time hand grazed because they're lesson ponies. They don't have a person that's necessarily dedicated to them the way all of the owned boarded horses were. So yeah, that I'm really glad that you called that out. That's such a great way to help introduce it and be able to, like you said, monitor it super closely. Like, you know how long you've been out there. Put on a podcast if you need some company or call a friend or somebody and hang out for a little bit if you hate being, you know, alone with your thoughts. Like, maybe.
No, I love it. I think that hand grazing as, you know, it's a great tool to reintroduce grass. But I also think it's a great tool to just spend like 15 to 20 uninterrupted minutes observing your horse, putting your hands on their legs, watching their respiration rate change, their cooling down from their ride. I think it's great practice in general to spend some time one-on-one with your horse after your ride. Remember, I feel like we say this in every darn episode, observe your horse, study your horse, put hands on your horse, understand baseline, and this is a great time to do it. So put on your podcast, hang out with your horse, put your hands up and down their legs, like make a map of them in your brain so that you can understand baseline, and if there's a change, you'll recognize it quickly.
Yeah, and if you really want to do double duty, bring your grooming kit with you.
That's right.
Hey, why do, you know, only two things at a time if I can do three? So bring your brushes out. Make it a whole party out there in a field where he's going to enjoy himself the most.
Multitasker, Jenna. Yeah. I like that for you.
Always have it stacking as much as I can. And with all the changes and the spring grass and the concerns that we have, we're going to do a whole separate episode on colic because that's big and that's scary. And I want to give that the amount of time and attention it deserves. But I do want to briefly touch on it here. I think we'd be remiss not to talk about it, right?
Yeah.
So when we talk about colic, like I know that is just kind of a broad term that we use for like abdominal pain in horses.
You're right.
I also know that it's like big and scary. And it's like still, to my knowledge, the leading cause of death in horses, which is pretty scary.
Yes.
So like prevention and recognition is super, super critical. But I kind of wanted to go over just, you know, down and dirty. What are those like risk factors that everyone should kind of be aware of?
Yep. So risk factors, like we're talking about right now, sudden change in their feeding habits. So whether you're putting them out on grass for the first time, you're changing their grain, you've gone to a new barn and they don't carry the, you know, Nutrina Senior, whatever you were feeding before, abrupt changes to their feed and their diet plan certainly a risk factor. It does not mean your horse is going to colic. It's just increasing their risk for it, right? Limited water intake. So this is something that we tend to see a lot in the colder months when horses are not drinking as much. Increased stall time. Rapid changes in workload. That's so like you'll see a lot when we get into the spring. It's like the perfect storm because it's nice outside. Everybody wants to go out for their first gallop of the season. The grass is also coming in. And it's just this perfect storm of all of these risks coming together. Feeding large grain meals. Same story about that non-structural carbohydrate load being really high and overwhelming the gut bugs in that hindgut. Poor parasite control. You can have impaction colic from dead bugs that are, you know, backing up in their GI system, as well as sand. You can have sand colic. And horses that have history of colic have a higher prevalence of colicking again. So, you know, once your horse has colic, that in and of itself increases their risk for colic. So a lot of different things that can happen and a lot of different types of colic, right? You have, again, we're going to have a whole episode on this, so we won't get too into the nitty gritty, but a lot of things can cause it. It can be impaction, it can be torsion, it can be gas, it can be a lot of different things, but the signs are typically similar. And again, I'm not a vet, so this is mostly what I'm sharing with you right now is mostly just my observations of what I've seen in all of my years of running this barn and all the horses that have colicked. But you're looking for like pawing. Like if you're walking past their stall and they're pawing at the ground, biting or looking at their flank, you'll kind of notice them like put their forelimbs out and stretch their bellies open, like trying to find some relief of the pressure. One that you'll never, you know, your horse getting up, laying down, rolling, staying recumbent, can't get them up, never a good sign. And then there's some that are like kind of tough, reduced appetite. That could be a lot of things. If your horse has a reduced appetite, keep an eye on it, but it does not mean that they're colicking. And then looking for, of course, all of us, I promise, Jenna, I know you're going to understand where I'm coming from here. Every equestrian at some time in their life has been stuck at the barn at 2 a.m. waiting for that poop pile. So we've all been there. I remember I was at IEA like 3 years ago in Indiana at a horse show, and my trainer and I were at the barn at like midnight, like literally jogging him, like waiting for him to poop. We're like, holy cow, he hasn't pooped since he's been here. Like, is he colicking? So lack of manure passing is always a red flag. Again, does not mean they're colicking, but something to look out for. So if you're missing some piles in your horse's stall, don't be alarmed, but definitely, you know, jot it down.
Yeah, we had one older guy where I was boarding. His name was Jet, and he, solid as the day was long, like just a good senior citizen dude, still did little up-down stuff with kiddos when he could. And every seasonal change, we knew. My bar manager and I would have like the 2 weeks blocked off on our calendar to know like this was the week that Jet was going to feel not great. And one of those days, sure enough, usually when his owner was traveling, bless her, she was such a good sport about it, but she would travel to go visit her kids and he would colic. And there would be no poop for 2 days or a day. And we would, you know, be on alert. We'd call the vet. She always knew too, because it was, you know, four or five years of this. And it would just be hand walking in shifts. You know, we would come out for like 3 and 4 hours at a time and then swap off and then do it again. And it's not glamorous. It's not fun. It's pretty. It's not the most enjoyable part of horse ownership, but I think he lived to be 32. So, you know.
You did something right, Jenna.
We made it work for as long as we could. And when it was his time, it was his time. And it was not colic. So always a plus there. But just as a like an anecdotal note, like it's scary.
Yeah.
But you don't ever have to be alone with it. Like, you know, call a friend, make sure your bar manager's aware. Whatever it is, it's okay. Your vet's been through it before. You guys will get through it too. And we've been there. We know what it's like. So if you're ever out there walking your horse in the dead of night, just know that we're thinking about you.
We see you.
Yep, you're doing a great job. So like we said, we're going to do colic way more in depth in a different episode. That's our very brief overview, just because we have mentioned it. We will continue to mention it in this episode. And then also, because I've already brought it up a couple of times, I want to make sure that we gave a moment to this. And again, we'll do this more and in depth in a later episode, but metabolic health. So
yeah,
especially in the spring, my horse had it. So very near and dear to my heart, and keeping horses very, you know, regular and consistent as much as possible. And you mentioned like spring grass and the higher sugar levels, which is definitely a big concern. There's like a whole thing with insulin dysregulation and equine metabolic syndrome. And again, we're not going to spend too much time, and not every horse is metabolically sensitive, but if you have an easy keeper or a pony or a horse with a history of laminitis, like definitely just keeping in mind that monitoring your pasture access is extra important for any of you folks out there. And some things to keep in mind are limiting grazing time and introducing it very, very slowly, like we talked about with hand grazing, turning out during the lower sugar times of the day. So thank you, Ashley, for already laying that out very clearly. and maintaining a constant forage intake. So as much consistency as you can provide to their whole digestive tract and GI system, always great. And then one additional note, and I know a lot of people feel, you know, one way or the other on this, but grazing muzzles can be very, very helpful for horses in the situation where maybe you can't really control how much time they're spending on grass or what time of day that they're getting access to this grass. But there are a lot of different kinds out there, a lot of different types to help with, you know, getting the grass in a different way or keeping the escape artists from getting it off as much as possible. So again, we'll talk about this more later on, but definitely wanted to just kind of give that a brief nod to anybody out there who's thinking about that right now, because you're not alone. There's definitely a lot of us who keep that pretty forefront, especially during the spring.
Love that. No. So good.
Okay, so we are two brief asides on the things that will require more time later, but we should probably bring it back around to digestive health specifically. Sure. And we've talked a little bit about these already throughout, but I wanted to take a second to just kind of list it a little bit more concisely and in one spot here. So for digestive health, to help maintain it, like, this is a complex system. There's a lot of different things that go into it. But from everything we talked about, can we kind of break down, you know, just some top things to help maintain that digestive health and all that goes into it?
Yeah, of course. Okay. First one, we talk about this. It feels like in every episode, we know, Ashley, we know horses thrive on routine. So consistency in all things, keeping their feeding schedules the same, their turnout the same, their exercise consistent. This is going to give their digestive system the same reliable stability that they need. Remember, we talked about how those gut bugs are very sensitive to change. So giving the horse a reliable daily routine is going to help keep everything in homeostasis. Very good. In the event that things have to change, doing it gradually is the best way that you can do it. If that's a change in feed, whether that be hay, grain, pasture, do it slowly. I know there's like some charts over there that like show you how to take like a fourth of the new feed and a third. I don't have it off the top of my head, but there are some charts out there that can help you if you're switching to a new feed or you're moving barns that can't accommodate whatever you're feeding now. Now, of course, there's going to be scenarios where changes can't be gradual. Hi, I'm putting my horse on a trailer and going to a horse show. There is no gradual way to do that. So in scenarios like that, when you can't change or where you can't control the environmental change, it's important that you try to control the other things, like making sure they have plenty of hay in front of them at all times, making sure they have plenty of water in front of them at all times. So when you get to the horse show, again, not a time to ration hay, not a time to ration water. So making sure that you're controlling what you can. And then that leads, you know, plenty of forage. Forage always, like we talked about in the very beginning, their bodies were designed to constantly be grazing these small little meals and keeping that gut retention time nice and slow moving through constant in food, constant out food. So very important there. Lots of hydration. We're always offering them water. There's for some horses that don't like to drink while they're traveling or they are very finicky with water, there's really cool products out there like Gallagher's water that can encourage horses to keep drinking in scenarios where they're refusing water. Andy won't drink Gallagher's water. I desperately tried and I was like, homie, this is really good. It tastes like hay. And
first time I've ever heard of not drinking it.
Yeah, he was pretty rude of him. It was like 100 degrees. We were at a show in Kentucky and I brought it with because I knew it was going to be hot and we were doing cross country at like 4 p.m. And I was begging him to drink it and he did not. So, but I've heard amazing things about it. Everyone else thinks it's great and Andy's the odd man out. So there's great product, electrolytes, things like that.
Just he's so many ways that he had to have, you know, like one or two things to help keep everybody humble.
That's right. That's right. We let him slide on some of the small stuff. And then, of course, just turnout movement. You know, we talked about how increased stall time, you know, can cause some digestive stress as well. So regular movement is going to encourage that gut motility, help keeping that. We talked about those muscular waves of peristalsis helping to move that food bolus through the body, and the horse's movement helps gut motility as well and helps just to encourage that food to continue on through the GI tract. So
I love that we talked about movement being medicine in the joint episode.
It's medicine for everything, for digestive health too.
It's all the things. So again, if you're hand grazing, maybe consider also adding just a hand walk in there too. Whatever you can do.
Love it. Yeah. So see, the hand grazing is multifaceted. There's so many reasons to do it. We're moving. That's
you're
right.
So involved. And again, we're habit staff. We're doing great.
That's right. I like this for us. Good for us.
And so, okay. So we've talked a lot about like the management and the things that you can do in the day-to-day and like over time and things like that, which means we are also going to have to talk about, where a supplement company, solvents. So there are supplements that can lend support. Like I said earlier in the episode, I fed one. I always felt really good about that. I noticed a difference in my horse when I was feeding that. But before we get into anything specific, are there ingredients that you look for in digestive supplements to make sure that your horse is getting, you know, what they actually need out of that?
Yes, of course. Because this is one of, like, my horses are always, as you know, they are always on magnesium. They also are on Smart Perform Advanced, and then they are on Digest. And so the first things that I'm looking for is a good probiotic. So a probiotic, a prebiotic, and a postbiotic. These are, like, terms that I'm sure most of us have heard in some capacity or another. They all sound very similar. They're sometimes endearingly referred to as, like, the biotics. And I think it's important just to give, like, a quick tidbit on how they are different. So a member of my team brought this image to me we were presenting this in a different part of the business, and we were trying to explain the difference between the three, and I absolutely loved this. So I want to share it on the podcast. The prebiotics are like fertilizers for your garden, right? They are food for the seeds. The probiotics are the seeds themselves. You're adding diversity to the vegetable population, different types of vegetables. And then the postbiotics are grown vegetables that provide energy, nutrients, and antioxidants. So all three of them are going to be working together. So when we look at a product like Smart Digest Ultra, we have the probiotics, which are the actual bugs, the gut bugs, Lactobacillus acidophilus. Like, there are a lot of long words that you're going to struggle to pronounce. Those are the Bifidobacter. Those are the gut bugs that you're looking for. Very good. The prebiotics are fibers like FOS and MOS or mannose-oligosaccharides. Those are going to be the prebiotic fibers that help to nourish those gut bugs and feed those gut bugs and give them like a source of energy. Very good. Then the postbiotics are like yeast fermentate, which we will see in some of our products as DV Equine Saccharomyces cerevisiae fermentate product. So that is like our finished fermentate. All of those three things work together really well. And we actually have a in vitro trial that showed that the utilization of that DV Equine product increased volatile fatty acid production, i.e., you know, is helping to break down more of that fiber ideally in the cecum, right? So those are three ingredients I'm always looking for. Fantastic.
I love that they have like a basic, medium, and advanced level name too, where it's like bugs.
Listen, bugs is a scientific standard right there. Gut bugs, you know, take that to PubMed. Yes, of course. Yeah. Gut bugs, and then we call them probiotic, and then we can have words like Lactobacillus acidophilus. So yes, they have.
I was forever impressed that you rattle that off without even a hesitation or a stutter. So
we talk about it all day long, like in my day job when I'm not on the pod. So, you know, Saccharomyces is just like, you know, it's just another word for us.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, definitely, for sure. Same in marketing. We're definitely doing the same stuff over here.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Hey, listen, you guys are writing the copy for the new product. So you know all about Lactobacillus, Jenna. I know you do.
That's true.
Yeah, I know you do.
I've learned a lot more thanks to you guys.
Well, we are happy to help. And then in addition to the bugs and the bug food and the fermentates and the postbiotics, we also have ingredients like glutamate, which is going to help to support intestinal health, carbonates, which I think carbonates are typically, you know, seen more in a gut product because they're helping to buffer the pH of the stomach, but still something that you might find in a digestive product. And then you may see some herbal ingredients as well, something like aloe vera or licorice root, which has been, you know, widely attributed to helping to soothe GI issues as well. So lots of different options out there, many different approaches. You can see like our Smart Digest Ultra is the base for all of our Colicare eligible products. So that one does have all the bugs and the but like, so you'll see the pre, the post, and the probiotics in that line as well. And you'll see it accompanied, with some of those other ingredients as well.
Yeah. And that's the line that I swear by personally. I fed my horse that for years. I don't have a lack of voice on here. We didn't have any issues for the, you know, many, many years that I had him on that product. So very near and dear to my heart. Had him on the colic care coverage all the way through for peace of mind. It really did make a big difference in his health, and then also kind of just how I felt about making sure I was maintaining it. So there's my personal plug for that one. And I know we have a couple other ones. There's like Smart GI, which is combining our gut and our digestive support. And we'll go over that a little bit more in depth too, because we'll also do a gastric episode here coming up, but just so that way you guys know that there's an option like that. But then I want to give you a second to talk specifically about Smart Perform, because I know that's one that's very near and dear to your heart.
Smart Perform, it feels like it's my firstborn child. And again, I say that all the time and I'm like, don't tell Millie. But we invented Smart Perform before I gave birth to Millie. So it's, I feel like it's fair. So Smart Perform, again, this is the first product in our Colicare eligible product lineup that does not have Smart Digest Ultra as the base. So it's a little bit different. Two super cool ingredients that you're going to see in here, though, are Clostat and Butyperl. So the Clostat is a bacteria, it's an active microbial bacteria, a proprietary strain of Bacillus subtilis, and it's like widely known for like attacking and killing pathogenic bacteria in the gut, which is just like so cool. So it's a positive gut bug that's out there like slaying dragons for you in your horse's gut. Very neat. We love Clostat, has a lot of great research behind it. And then Butyperl, which is encapsulated butyric acid. And it's like has this really cool micro pearl delivery system. Really, really neat. We'd love to hook you guys up with some research on the two of those and, you know, explain to you why Smart Perform Ultra is so different. And then, of course, that postbiotic that I mentioned, the DB Equine postbiotic, the Saccharomyces cerevisiae fermentate product. Really, really neat there, too. So this is, I would say, our most scientifically forward formulation. Now, again, it is gut, joint, and digestion. So we tried to pair those, like, you know, the three things that keep every horse owner up at night. And obviously, digestion is one of them. Like you said, the lead, you know, colic is the leading cause of death in horses for the first 20 years of their life. So this is certainly something that is top of mind for all of us. So very, very unique formulation in that. Obviously, Smart Digest Ultra, I'm a diehard fan as well. But this being the only product that is in the Colicare lineup that does not have Smart Digest Ultra in it, it certainly warrants, you know, everybody taking a look at it.
Love that. And as quick call out to one that we don't make, but is still incredibly popular and incredibly beloved across the equine community is Succeed. We carry that as well. So if you ever heard of, you know, anything Succeed packs or things like that, another great one to consider putting your horse on. And also, I meant to mention this before and almost forgot, but I will have to fact check myself on this one before we publish this. I'm pretty sure in one of our first episodes, you and I put in our guesses for what was the most popular supplement that we sell.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty confident it was Smart Digest Ultra.
It was. And I think that is still true. 15 episodes later, I think that's still true. Yeah.
And I think that's so cool. I think there's something really incredible that product is so widespread, that there's so many horse owners who feel really, you know, passionately and positively about feeding their horse digestive support. If you are one of those, we said it earlier, we'll say it again, pat yourself on the back. You're doing a great job. If you haven't started yet, but you're interested, also a great job. Learning and growing as horse people is like the best thing we can possibly do. But yeah, I wanted to make sure that I called out that one is not just, you know, a personal favorite amongst the office and the employees, but it really is one that a lot of people have gotten great use out of. And we love seeing all those success stories when they come through on social media or when our customer care talks to you guys over the phone. Okay, so that is so much information about digestive support and the hindgut and all those things. And per usual, I feel like we've like barely scratched the surface on so much of it, but I'm hoping that this was, you know, overall helpful to folks who maybe don't know a lot about it, or maybe even who do know a lot and got to hear Ashley use all these really long syllabled words and gain some stuff there that maybe they wouldn't have known before. But I know for me and for my takeaways, the microbiome is a huge thing. The consistent forage intake is more important than it has ever been. And it was always very, very important to myself and other people. And the management portion of it really cannot be overlooked as far as like maintaining hindgut health and your horse's overall health along with that.
Yes, absolutely. The equine digestive system is as powerful as it is delicate. And maintaining a balanced hindgut microbiome and taking care of that environment of gut bugs is so critical. And the importance of that cannot be overstated. It is absolutely imperative, not just to your horse's digestive health, but to their overall well-being. It impacts so many systems beyond just food metabolism and digestion.
And along with all of that, like we are in the season where there are just so many new variables, the grass, the schedule changes, the mm-hmm. weather, and all of that definitely plays a really big part. But there's now a lot of information out there. Hopefully you gleaned something from this episode that can help you kind of navigate that in either like just a more thoughtful or maybe an improved kind of way. And we went over, you know, how the system works, the early warning signs and how to keep supporting it all the way through the season with those like consistent practices. So I feel like we covered a lot of ground while also still leaving so much on the table that we're going to have to come back to at some other point when it comes to digestion stuff. But hopefully you guys all got some great stuff out of this. Hopefully there was something, you know, new or different or interesting here for you as well. And as usual, if you have, you know, thoughts or questions or want us to, you know, dive in a little bit deeper on something specific, we'll have a link at the end that we're going to go over here in just a second that'll take you to a giveaway form that asks those kind of questions where you can fill that out. So I think with that, we'll kind of jump on into that portion of it. So giveaway next.
And as a reminder, for the entire month of March, we're giving away a Smart Equine prize package, which includes a $25 Smart Equine gift card, a Smart Equine travel blanket, and a Smart Equine thermos. Enter for your chance to win now by clicking or tapping on the link in the podcast description, which will take you directly to our form, or you can type it in yourself at www.smartequine.com/podcast giveaway. And remember, this giveaway is open all month long. So if you're listening in March of 2026, make sure to get your entry in and good luck.
You can find links to today's products in the show notes on your podcast player or on our website at www.smartpackequine.com/blog.
We are here twice a month on the 15th and the 30th, but in between, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook as Smart Equine or shop online at smartequine.com.
Until next time, stay smart, stay consistent.
And give your horse a cookie from us.